Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Tomorrow marks 18 months since the last Northern Irish executive collapsed. Elections were held in May last year, with Sinn Féin emerging as the largest party ahead of the Democratic Unionist Party. But Michelle O'Neill has never been elected to the office of First Minister, and the North has remained without a functioning assembly and executive ever since. So what prospects then for a return to Stormont in the coming months? And what will DUP leader Geoffrey Donaldson need to do to persuade his party that he should become a deputy to a Sinn Féin First Minister? With me now to discuss these themes are Alex Kane, a political commentator and former Director of Communications for the UUP, and Deirdre Heenan, Professor of Social Policy at the University of Ulster. Good morning to both of you. Alex,
good morning.
Can I start with you first, please, on a front page story on today's Belfast Telegraph, because I don't know to what extent this actually is going to inform the bigger picture here. Geoffrey Donaldson accuses unnamed DUP colleagues of briefing against him. What's going on?
Well, I think it's been coming to this for some time, actually, because within the DUP, we know that it's not a formal split, but there's a very clear division of opinion on whether the party should make a compromise to save devolution in some form, or whether it should remain inflexible fundamentalist, allow devolution to go and just allow Northern Ireland to be governed as a full part of the United Kingdom directly by Westminster. I think what has now happened is that Geoffrey Donaldson has done the numbers. He has talked to his assembly party, he's talked to his MPs, he's talked to his party officers, and he has talked to his key people in the party executive. I reckon he now thinks he is a majority of the party who are willing to take a risk for devolution. And he's striking out. He's saying to the people opposed to him, look, I'm going to run with this. I'm going to strike out on this. If you have something better, if you have a viable and available alternative, now is the time to say it. And I know the Belfast Telly ran the story as a leak, but I have no doubt I've been in the political game long enough to know that the leadership of the DUP will have been aware as soon as that email was sent, it would be a front page story in some newspaper and dominate the headlines for a couple of days. It was done deliberately, and again, which suggests to me that this is the beginning of maybe the formal part of the split within the DUP.
But there isn't, is there, a serious leadership alternative to Geoffrey Donaldson within the DUP at the moment?
No, there isn't, and that's what makes it more useful. I mean, the great thing about parties which are in conflict, if there are a couple of people available who are willing to take over and might be able to muster a majority to take over and bring some confidence to the party, you can have a full-on fight inside. If there isn't, and maybe it's not a good thing in some ways, but it'll save Donaldson the fact that there is no fund, there is no party, there's no party figure either on the devolutionist wing or on the direct rule wing who could unite the party. So for want of anybody else in that field, the party is stuck with Donaldson, and he's going to now say, look, I don't care what the rest of you say. We need to save devolution, because without devolution, there is no voice for unionism anywhere. And I think he's now just saying to these people, do this. Let's do it quickly. Let's move. We need to move. Let's not drag this on for another 18 months.
Yeah. So, Deirdre, we look at this period of devolution's suspension compared and contrast to other ones. Think back in the past, there was a frenzy of talks. There would be delegations, negotiations going backwards and forwards between Dublin, London, Belfast and so on, trying to hammer out a compromise. That has been almost entirely absent in the last while. Why is that?
Well, I think that is a very good point. In the past, we have, as you say, we've witnessed the parties going up and down the hill to Stormont Castle, getting their pictures taken outside, the waiting press listening with bated breath to hear where movement has happened. This time, it seems like we are absolutely stuck in a quagmire. Nothing is happening. I cannot see who's in charge. The British Prime Minister is deeply disinterested, and perhaps that's what's different this time. Rishi Sunak has said, we have made this winter framework. It's been ratified by Parliament. That's it. There's no going back. His Northern Ireland office have reiterated that and said the winter framework is the way that we will move forward in terms of trading relations with the EU. And quite frankly, he has so much on his own plate in terms of domestic policies and indeed foreign policy that Northern Ireland is very, very far down his list. So I think he's made a decision to say, just let it drift on, because really, what difference does it make to him personally, to his party? There are no votes in it. And the upshot of that is people here in Northern Ireland have been left to languish, to drift, rudderless. It is completely inconceivable that this would be acceptable in any other part of the United Kingdom. I mean, we have so much debate about Arlene Foster going to a GAA match. We have so much debate about whether or not Michelle O'Neill will go to the Queen's funeral. And yet we seem to have blithely accepted this form of indirect rule without any debate, without any discussion. As far as I'm aware, there are no official talks going on to move this process forward. It is completely unclear what the DUP want, other than something that is completely delusionary. So they've talked about the need for primary legislation, to a form of words that will assure them that they're still part of the UK, and yet the Windsor framework is going nowhere. So that would be completely, firstly, very unlikely, and secondly, utterly meaningless. So I think the frustration here is, who is in charge? Who really cares? Who's moving this forward? And has the British government basically said, we are content with this period of drift because it's not hurting them electorally? And in fact, the DUP have probably calculated that this period of drift, even though people are suffering, they didn't suffer at the polls, and they might decide that they're going to brazen this out until we get another administration in Westminster.
It's not hurting them electorally, is it? And Alex, you wonder, while we're in this place where number 10 appear not to care less, Brussels is pretty silent, Dublin is quite passive, are the DUP just sitting there quietly waiting perhaps to become mathematically relevant again in Westminster after another election?
Well, I think the first, just touching on what Deirdre was saying earlier there, she's right. I think that Rishi Sunak and Boris Johnson and Liz Truss and the whole phalanx of former prime ministers and leaders we've had, there is no emotional attachment. There's no emotional attachment between either the Conservative Party or Labour Party and what I'll describe as Northern Ireland unionism. So they're not going to go in and bat for them. They're not going to save them. They're not going to rescue them from themselves. That's the first problem. In terms of you know, you're saying of the DUP, they're not taking an electoral hit. They certainly didn't take it in the last two elections, 22 election and the one we had, the local government elections we had a couple of months ago. But the problem is, you get to a point where it becomes unsalvageable. You can't rescue it. You know, they have no plans. We've no idea quite what they're thinking, because it's quite clear. They say they want the Northern Ireland's position in the union secured. It can't be secured by anything other than the existing constitutional guarantee, which has been there since 1921, which is that Northern Ireland remains a part of the United Kingdom until a majority decide otherwise. There is no way of rewriting that. The British government's not going to say, oh, by the way, we're not going to have a border poll for 25 years. Oh, and by the way, we're going to make sure that unionism can't, you know, be fandangled around. That's, none of that's possible. And so I was going to say, the DUP, what they did, they keep putting down these 5-point demands, 7-point demands. They negotiate themselves into a cul-de-sac, but all the time they're going deeper and deeper into the cul-de-sac. They seem blithely unaware of the fact that the soil is piling up behind them. So when they get to the inevitable brick wall at the other end, there's nowhere to turn. And that, I think, for unionism, I think this is potentially an existential crisis, because if the DUP get this wrong, I have no idea. And I've been involved in unionism for 50 years. I have no idea where unionism goes if devolution goes down in the next few months.
Deirdre, these constitutional issues don't really butter very many parsnips on the table, do they? What has been the impact on health, on education, on roads in the absence of devolved government?
Well, it's difficult to say in a way that people don't say, oh gosh, haven't we heard this before? Because the word crisis is so often bandied about. But it'd be very difficult to underestimate the crisis that we're currently seeing, for example, in our health service, where we have 1 in 3 people on a waiting list. We have hundreds of people dying daily on a hospital waiting list. A&Es are overrun. We've been in a position that we've never been in before. A&Es have actually closed to the public, our accident and emergency departments, putting out messages telling people don't come here because we're completely overwhelmed. And so the knock-on effect then is that the system is breaking down bit by bit. There is chaos and we cannot see a way forward. And I think, as Alex rightly says, the longer this goes on, people start saying, well, really, what difference would it make if we had a devolved government back? Because it seems impossible that they would have the capacity and the wherewithal to deal with these issues that have now become almost impossible to think about where you would start to deal with it. And so increasingly, people are saying that if we have a new government, or at least the government in London, needs to take some responsibility here, because it is important to remember the Westminster government is still sovereign and that devolution was based on a principle of parity. And there is no parity for the people of Northern Ireland. I find it ironic that we're arguing about the Windsor framework and saying it makes us somehow less British. Yet apparently it's acceptable for us to have waiting lists that are completely out of kilter with the United Kingdom, health outcomes that are completely out of kilter. And the list goes on in terms of economic inactivity, poor outcomes in terms of the economy, education. So I think we really need to say, look, someone's got to have a handle on this, because how long can we be allowed to continue where we are being held to ransom because of a psychodrama in one party that is actually a minority and doesn't actually know what it wants or where it's going? How long do we have to put up with this?
Alex, the full import of what you were saying there a minute ago is just taken a while to kind of register with me, but it is, you are saying, aren't you, look folks, devolved government has collapsed before and it took a generation and the troubles to get it back. And are you saying that it is not unthinkable that the same thing might happen again?
Yes, I think we're in a very serious position, because even if we did, even if a deal was done in over the next few weeks, not enough, I still think some sort of deal is possible. It's not going to be a deal, I think David would agree with this, it's not going to be a deal where we can all turn around and say, my goodness me, we have done it. We have got the Sinn Féin, the DUP, the UUP, SDLP working in harmony, working together with the government. So I think the best we can hope for is another sticking plaster. But there comes a point in all of these situations, and 25 years after the Good Friday Agreement, there comes a point when more and more people are questioning and are posing the question, as did, is it worth having devolution, or making it more different, if you like? Is devolution now possible in the sense of genuinely cooperative power sharing in government in Northern Ireland? And I have to say, my very pessimistic view is that form of devolution is probably no longer possible, no matter what happens in the next few weeks.
Deirdre?
Well, I like to be an optimist, but actually I've got to the point where I think it's 10 years since we've had a programme for government. Devolution has completely failed people of Northern Ireland in the last 25 years. And I think the point is people
are
not
saying...
Hang
on a second. Is it not the political parties that have failed the people of Northern Ireland rather than devolution itself as an idea?
Well, devolution as an idea is a very good idea. But then that takes you into the semantics of the power sharing arrangements that we have. Did we have actual power sharing, or was it just sharing out of power, give you a bit and give me a bit, but with no real vision of where we were going forward? No programme for government, no agreed vision of what Northern Ireland could look like. And so I think that has failed. It has absolutely failed. And so if we are going to go back to devolution, it cannot be business as usual.
All right. Thank you both very much. Alex Kane, Deirdre Heenan, we'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.